I'm Sheila Cast, and this is Midday. President Obama just outlined actions he intends to take without Congress's okay, aimed at curbing gun violence. They include more background checks, expanded access to mental health treatment, and more funds for enforcing gun laws. More than 30,000 Americans are killed by firearms each year, and the United States averages more than one mass shooting a day. As the nation struggles to prevent gun violence and mass shootings, will these actions keep guns out of the wrong hands without infringing on individuals' rights to bear arms? This hour, we'll hear reaction from both sides of the gun control debate and look at the impact gun permit laws have on suicide and homicide rates. That's Midday, after the news from NPR. Welcome to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. We're going to be continuing the conversation that President Obama kicked off with his remarks at the White House. We just heard his remarks about executive actions that he will take to curb gun violence. Executive action meaning he is not going to Congress for the authority to do this. Part of what he plans to do require background checks for people trying to buy firearms through a trust, a corporation, or other legal entity. He wants to make the FBI's background check system more efficient, so that checks can be processed 24 hours a day. He wants to double the number of personnel conducting background checks through the National Instant Criminal Background Check System, NICS. He wants to improve notification of local authorities when prohibited individuals attempt to buy a gun. He wants to hire more agents at the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives. He wants to invest $500 million in greater access to mental health treatment and ensure that firearms dealers notify law enforcement if their guns are lost or stolen. What is your reaction to President Obama's executive actions? Is this executive overreach, or do these policies go far enough to make a dent in gun violence in the U.S.? What are your thoughts? Give us a call to share your thoughts. We're at 410-662-8780. That's our local number. We also have a toll-free line, 1-866-661-9309. Or you can send us an email to midday@wypr.org. Here in the studio with me is Furman de Brabander. He's a philosophy professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art here in Baltimore. And he's author of the book, Do Guns Make Us Free? His book examines the pro-gun movement, its political roots, what the radical gun rights movement says about us as a country, and what it portends for freedom and for our democracy. Welcome back to Midday.
Thank you.
And joining us by phone is Cassandra Crifossi. She's an assistant scientist at the Center for Gun Policy and Research in the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. She studies injury epidemiology and public safety. Welcome.
Thank you.
It's nice to have you with us.
I'm happy to be here. Thanks for the opportunity.
Sure. I think I heard President Obama cite your research, Cassandra Crifossi, although I didn't hear him say your name. You did the study that looked at two states, Connecticut and Missouri, and the impact of their handgun purchaser licensing requirements on gun deaths, either by suicide or homicide. Tell us the gist of what you found.
Sure. So there are 18 states that currently require background checks for all sales. And so we knew previously that there was some association that these states with background check laws for all sales had lower rates of firearm suicide and firearm homicide. What we didn't know was that directly the result of the law or something else going on. So we looked at two changes. Connecticut passed a law requiring a permit to purchase a handgun in 1995, and Missouri repealed a very similar law in 2007. These laws required application and a very rigorous background check and some safety training before you could purchase a handgun, and you couldn't sell a gun to anyone without a permit. What we saw in Connecticut after they passed their law was a 40% reduction in homicides in the 10 years following the passage of the law, and a 15% reduction in firearm suicides. And when Missouri repealed their law in 2007, there was a 16% increase in both firearm suicide and firearm homicide. And many of the indicators that we use to determine if guns are being diverted to criminals, many of those indicators jumped up quite high following Missouri's repeal, which would indicate to us that it was easier for individuals in Missouri to get guns than it was prior to the repeal of the law. So we determined that these laws, a permit to purchase system as a form of a universal background check, really had a benefit for public safety.
And in your view, how does this connect to the particular points that President Obama said he wants to take in the absence of action by Congress?
Sure. So there's a couple of connections. So first off, in 32 states, you don't need to undergo a background check if you make a purchase from a private seller, whether that's at a gun show or from a friend or an acquaintance or through an online purchase. Many individuals that may be prohibited from purchasing a gun could go through this system where you don't have to undergo a background check. And what one of the executive actions that President Obama is taking, is that they're going to better define who is a seller, who's engaged in the business. So this would increase the number of individuals that would be required to have a license to sell firearms, and that would then increase the number of individuals that will be subject to a background check. And we know that the more people undergoing background checks, the less likely a prohibited person would be to gain access to a firearm.
Furman de Brabander, you wrote about sort of the roots of the gun culture in the United States and why so many Americans are comfortable. You trace that people really have gone from thinking of guns primarily as something they do for hunting to thinking of guns as something that they need for self-defense, those who support guns. In your view, is what President Obama's talking about today and what he intends to do and says he has the executive authority to do, is that running against the tide of the United States?
No, it's running against the tide of a minority of voters who are extremely passionate. He pointed that out. This entire debate is wholly and hopelessly warped. The Congress, which once was looked favorably upon certain of these reforms, these regulations, as he mentioned, he quoted John McCain, now is completely held hostage by the NRA, he said. And the NRA is itself dominated by a minority of gun owners out there who are very passionate on this issue. He pointed out accurately they are single-issue voters. And the vast majority of Americans they look favorably upon these regulations that he suggested, but they are more passive. And I think they see it as they see this important issue as one among many that they would support. And so we need to raise the passion of the silent majority to match the amazing passion of the minority that is right now driving this debate. And that's why he, I think, very effectively quoted Martin Luther King, saying that we need to convince the majority of Americans that this is an urgent issue and they must hold their representatives accountable.
Well, let me push back a bit. A point the president himself raised, that people look at some of the recent mass shootings and say these fuller gun checks would not have stopped, as he said, the last shooting or the one before that or the one before that. And then the president said, I reject that thinking. But right. Obviously many of his critics don't. If we're busy about making changes that will not actually keep the wrong people from getting guns and using them, what's the point?
Well, I'd like to make a point there. So there are every day in the U.S., 92 people die from a firearm-related injury. So while mass shootings certainly gain a lot of attention, and that's what the dialogue is being driven by right now, there's a mass shooting happening every day in this country, but they're happening one at a time. And I think that the number of these executive actions that President Obama is putting forward will help to address some of these deaths, particularly the two-thirds of firearm deaths are the result of firearm suicide. Increasing mental health access and improving the transfer of mental health records into the instant check system to keep those high-risk individuals from gaining access to guns.
From a debris measure, is there something you want to add to that?
I was just going to say that I noticed that the measures he's proposing, they are in direct response to three of the major shootings we had this past year, the Chattanooga shooting at the Marine Recruitment Center. That shooter, he got his guns online, four of them, I believe, without any background check. The shooting in Lafayette, Louisiana, He had been committed to an institution, but I believe it was Georgia or Alabama. They're one of the worst states in sending such reports, such information to the background check system. And that's something that President Obama is proposing to tighten up this time. And the shooter in Charleston, he was able to get his gun thanks to the 3-day loophole. The FBI was not able to process his background check in sufficient time. But now that we're doubling the number of agents, hopefully that are doing these background checks, hopefully that will be fixed for the future.
I would like to talk to John Jocelyn. He's the legislative vice president of the Associated Gun Clubs of Baltimore. Do we have him yet on the line? We're going to reach out to him. But meanwhile, let's talk to Ken in Owings Mills, who's calling us. Ken, welcome to Midday.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, we hear you fine. What's your comment?
I just noted that one of your guests mentioned that mental health records of high risk mentally ill would be forwarded to the background checks. Unfortunately, the president did not mention that aspect and simply said that mental health records would be sent to the federal government. Now, you know, I'm an advocate for the mentally ill. I've testified for, you know, that people are impinging on the rights of the mentally ill. And I regard this as an encroachment. I'm sure he hadn't intended that. But when a person who's mentally ill, who goes to a doctor, hears this on TV, they're going to think right away, the federal government's going to have my records, and potentially they might not seek treatment. So in this one statement, he has affected the treatment of the health of the mentally ill. I think that he should clarify that.
Well, so currently federal law doesn't prohibit a person from buying a firearm just because they seek treatment with for a mental health issue. You have to be adjudicated mentally incompetent or unable to care for yourself. You have to have been involuntarily committed. So it's not just seeking help that would prohibit you. And there are some studies in states that have stronger mental health restrictions than the federal government, and they haven't found a decrease in help seeking among mentally ill individuals. And just to clarify, what I had said was that they were going to transfer mental health records so that they could keep guns out of the hands of high-risk individuals, not necessarily that the records of the individuals would be those that were only high-risk, but that people that suffer from mental health or major depressive disorder could be at higher risk for suicide,
right,
not necessarily harming others.
Cassandra Crafasi, our caller Ken, was clear that you had qualified what you said. He said that President Obama didn't, and I confess I did not listen as carefully as Ken to exactly how President Obama changed it. Furman, you wanted to make a point?
I was just going to say, I mean, I agree with the caller. I mean, at the end of the day, the mental health issue is, I believe, a smokescreen, and it is.
What do you mean by that?
I mean, it's an issue that the GOP brings up to try and, when there was a shooting, to try and dodge the you know, the issue of gun control regulations. They would rather focus on mental illness than on necessary regulations. And the president called him out on that. And a very interesting political move. He basically says to the GOP, since you already agree about the mental health issue, then you need to vote on this. I think his quote was, you have to put your money where your mouth is.
That's Furman de Brabander, who is the author of a book, Do Guns Make Us Free? He's a philosophy professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art in Baltimore. This is Midday on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. Also with us by phone is Cassandra Crafasi, assistant scientist at the Center for Gun Policy and Research in the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. And joining us on the phone is John Jocelyn, legislative vice president of the Associated Gun Clubs of Baltimore. That's an organization that operates target shooting ranges and promotes knowledge of safe gun handling practices in the Baltimore area. Welcome to the show, John.
Good morning.
Good afternoon. Time is moving on. Let me ask you first what your reaction is to what President Obama was talking about.
Well, it was high on emotion, low on substance. He merely restated the failed strategies of the past. We don't differ on the goal. We differ on the means to achieve it.
Well,
violence is behavior, not technology. We always focus on the guns. We don't focus on the real problem. And the problem isn't the hardware, it's the software. There's never a mention of the causes of violence in our society. And that's the breakdown of the American family. As a community organizer, the president should know this. He mentioned Chicago with its high crime rate. Why didn't he stay there and solve his problem? Show us how to do it.
It's interesting to me that you focus on that. I was struck by how much of his approach was focused on mass shootings and how little mention was made of street shootings. There was that one line about it happens every day on the streets of Chicago, but it seemed as if he really wants people to frame this as a problem of keeping, you're right, hardware, keeping guns out of the hands of people who have an idea about shooting a lot of people. You think that the approach to this is to solve the basic problem of breakdown in family before we can get a handle on gun violence?
Well, there you go. You're using the term gun violence. Guns aren't violence. They are simply hardware. Violence is behavior.
Okay,
and if we don't modify the behavior, we are never, ever going to solve this problem. And we have to look at whether we want to be doing something or looking like we're doing something. And we've been playing the looking like game for years and accomplished nothing. We have nothing to show for it. Crime is rampant. Baltimore City has seen an uptick, even though we have the toughest gun laws in the nation. It isn't responding. Criminals don't obey the law. They operate outside the law.
And
so laws that impact the law-abiding citizen impact only the law-abiding citizen.
And your proposal for solving the underlying problems is what?
We have to look at the social causes. There's poverty, there's frustration, there's an education system that's broken. We have people who are frustrated, they feel no hope, they aren't able to get jobs, we're farming jobs out to other countries, and someone comes along and gives them a quick fix. We are the nation of the quick fix. Here, carry drugs for me. Here, pass a gun law. This will solve everything. It doesn't.
What is it about background checks that you think is ineffective?
They're ineffective because criminals don't go through background checks. And when they are caught in a background check, for those who aren't smart enough to avoid it, they aren't prosecuted. The mere attempt to purchase a firearm when you're prohibited is a crime, but they are not prosecuted for it.
That's John Jocelyn, Legislative Vice President of the Associated Gun Clubs of Baltimore, here on Midday on WIPR. Also with us is Furman de Brabander, author of Do Guns Make Us Free? He's a philosophy professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art. And Cassandra Crafasi, assistant scientist at the Center for Gun Policy and Research at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. You can join us. You can give us a call at 410-662-8780 or send us an email at midday@wypr.org. Zach is calling us from Timoni. And Zach, welcome to Midday.
Hi, thank you for having me. I just like to address what the last caller said, that, you know, people, whether they're experts on guns and gun safety and firearms training or not, are not experts on what the real cause of the issue is. Bottom line is, a collapse in family values or not, people don't kill 30, 40 people at a time or more just because they're angry if they don't have an assault rifle. That's the issue. There is no other issue. And they want to make it into something else, something about Obama taking people's guns, or the Democrats want to confiscate your guns. But the bottom line is, it's out of control when terrorists who can't even fly in an airplane can buy assault weapons.
I appreciate your call. John, do you want to respond to Zach?
Boy, that's a tough one. That was an interesting statement. I don't know how you can say that terrorists can buy assault weapons, because the only way they could buy any firearm would be if they weren't known to be terrorists. This goes back to the fact of a background check that doesn't pick up a record is fruitless. And we've seen that time and time again.
I think perhaps what he was referring to is that refusal by some individuals to place people on a terror watch list on a list that would also restrict them from purchasing a firearm.
Well, you have to understand that local law enforcement does not have access to the no-fly list.
Well, then it needs to be national law enforcement or federal law enforcement or the ATF and the FBI. And these are all the measures that the NRA has blocked. So when you say that we are revamping, that we are just trying to redo the failed strategies of the past, sir, the problem is we're not even trying. We have not even been trying. We do not have universal background checks as it is. It is all too easy to purchase firearms through a private transaction, and the FBI has destroyed the ATF's ability to track the flow of illegal firearms into cities like Baltimore.
I'd like to pull Jen Polonakis, Polyokonis. Jen, how do I pronounce your last name?
Yes, it's Jen Polyokonis.
Polyokonis. She's legislative director for Marylanders to Prevent Gun Violence, and she's calling us with a point that I think she thinks has been left out of this conversation. Jen?
Well, I was moved by the president's speech, and I was moved by his actions. I agree that in terms of we haven't done all that we can. We have a background check system, but there's a hole in it the size of a truck. And by continually saying that our system is not working, when at the same time so many legislators and the NRA try to make it as weak as possible, it doesn't make any sense. And Congress has done nothing. Congress has done nothing while 33 people are killed every day with a gun. Not to mention the over 50 suicides every day. And the president is finally standing up and he's saying, yes, this is hard, but we have to try. And we're not going to save every life, but we're going to save some, and that matters.
But I'm not quite sure when you say there is a hole in the background check system as big as a truck, are you referring to the fact that it works in some states and not others? What is the hole that you identify so clearly?
Absolutely. I'm sticking toward the private sale loophole that exists on the national system. And so, as everyone has spoken, we have a background check that federally licensed dealers have to go through to who they are selling a gun to. But if you're listed as a private seller, you can sell a gun on the Internet or you can sell a gun at a gun show, and you don't have to conduct that same background check. And so even in states like Maryland, where we have a strong system, you have to get a background check, you have to get a license, which is a handgun, still about 40% of our guns come from states where there are very lax laws, and you don't have to go through those same systems and procedures.
I appreciate your calling us. I confess I'm still perplexed by the fact that I'm assuming that when we look at street crime, perhaps more than the mass shootings that have gotten so much so many headlines, but the for example in Baltimore, 900 shootings in 2015, I've just always assumed that many of those guns are in the hands of people who didn't buy them, who got them third, fourth, fifth, sixth hand from someone who did buy them, or who acquired them illegally in some other way. It's not quite clear to me how the conversation we're having relates to the crime that is gripping Baltimore in particular. And I'd love to hear from you, Furman, if you have an answer to that.
Well, quite simply, those guns are coming in through, they're coming in from states nearby that do not have universal background checks very easily, or they're coming in from what we call straw purchasers. People who go to legitimate dealers and buy a bunch of guns and sell them off to criminals, and we cannot follow them, we cannot track them, but we can improve that if we tried. There are 18 states that have done it and that do it very effectively, and quite simply, the way to fix this would be to have universal background checks across the whole country. It seems ludicrous. So, Mr.
But
Jocelyn,
if the gun is stolen at some point,
that's
it still
right.
Well, is going to be in the hands of the wrong
person. Well, it can be tracked. We need to bulk up the ATF and their funding and their manpower to track these weapons. It is done. It isn't done in other democracies in the world. And there's no reason that we cannot do it. We're not even trying, as I've been saying before. It's ludicrous to blame Baltimore and Chicago for their high crime rates. And then Mr. Jocelyn says, oh, but they have the strongest gun laws in the country. They are these jurisdictions are surrounded by states with loose gun laws, and that enables the flow of these guns into these cities.
John Jocelyn, we're down to just 2 minutes. Is there a comment you'd like to make before I have to wrap this abbreviated midday up?
I would point out that the states that are contiguous to Maryland that have the alleged loose gun laws also have a lower per capita homicide rate than Maryland does. So very clearly, the laws do not impact the homicide rates in any jurisdiction. If you look at the tracking on the stats, you'll find out that every time we pass a gun law, there's no impact.
Something obviously we're going to need to continue. John Jocelyn, who is the legislative vice president of the Associated Gun Clubs of Baltimore. Cassandra Crafasi from Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. Before I let you go, David from Towson called us. I don't have time to put him on the air, but he's asking about the prohibition on federal funding research on gun violence and asks, is this something Congress would have to undo?
Yeah, they removed the specific amount of money that CDC had spent on gun violence research from their budget, and put some language into a bill saying that they could not advocate for gun violence research and a variety of different things. However, that's been removed.
Cassandra, we're flat out of time.
I
thank you for taking part in this conversation. I thank John Jocelyn from the Associated Gun Clubs of Baltimore, and I thank Furbin de Brabander, philosophy professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, author of Do Guns Make Us Free? And I thank our listeners for taking part in this, and I thank Two Boots Pizza for providing lunch for our guest today. Two Boots is located at 1203 West Mount Royal Avenue, a block from the Lyric, serving traditional and Cajun Italian pizzas. Stay tuned now for Here and Now, and we'll talk more about gun violence tomorrow on Midday. Join us then at noon.
Midday is produced by Maureen Harvey and Connor Graham. The show is engineered by Luke Spicknall. Music produced by Jeff Truman and High Gravity Sounds. Midday podcasts and live streaming are available at WYPR.org or on demand using the WYPR app. This is WYPR, your NPR news station.